from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From age 13 to 32, Wendy Lazenko worked in the sex trade, prostitution, pornography, strip clubs. It was only as she left that she realized she was a victim of sex trafficking. Now she's out and advocating for others. A bill before the U.S. Senate would help, but it's hung up. Wendy Lazenko is wading into the man camps and sex trade of the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota. But sex trafficking is a national problem. This hour on Point, we'll talk with North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp, with Wendy Lazenko, and more about the harrowing truth of sex trafficking in America. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you seen it in your city, your town, seen who gets trapped and trafficked? What's the way to stop it, to rein it in? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. You may think of sex trafficking as something from the international news. Well, it's there, but it's here as well. Here last summer, FBI rescued 168 children and arrested 281 pimps in a nationwide sting in the USA. Here's FBI Director then, James Comey, addressing the issue.
These are not faraway kids in faraway lands. These are our kids on our street corners, our truck stops, our motels, our casinos. These are America's children.
What's it like to be in that life? Here's Talesia Espinoza, Tampa, Florida, telling ABC. This was back in 2012, but gives you the flavor how she was trapped in sex trafficking for 5 years.
You know, I think about this picture. That day I probably slept with maybe 20 to 30 men. I've had to jump out of moving vehicles. I've had to run for my life. Girls that have been murdered, girls that have been abused and still had to come out into the streets.
And here's the sheriff of Williams County, North Dakota, where the big oil boom is on in the Bakken oil fields, talking earlier this month with the BBC.
Crime has gone up simply because we've got 2-3 times more people than we had 5-6 years ago. With that brings some crime. No, you don't see prostitutes hanging in parking lots or anything like that around here. It's all arranged over the internet. Sexual assaults, of course, are up.
With us right now from his backyard, Minot, North Dakota, Wendy Lazenko joins us. She's now executive director and founder of For Her North Dakota, helping young women get out of trafficking. They're hoping to raise money for a shelter. She's a member of the National Survivor Network, which advocates for survivors of human trafficking. Wendy Lazenko, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi there. Thank you.
How did you get dialed into the problem emerging with all this activity in the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota, Wendy? How did it come on your screen?
Well, I was working with at-risk youth out of Montana and speaking nationally around the country. And I was hearing continual reports from the men that were, you know, coming home to visit about the behavior that was going on over here, really alarming things. And then I also had a couple girls come to me in confidentiality to share that they had actually been asked to come over and work here. I mean, and these are 13, 14-year-old girls asked to leave the safety of their own homes to come over into the oil field to work in food trucks or housekeeping. And so that really put it on my radar. But then understanding the dynamics of, you know, increased population, the majority of that population being men, low resources, law enforcement absolutely having no training or education on the issue of sex trafficking, and lots of money, I just knew that it was going to be an issue.
We've had an arrest just in the last week, a couple of arrests here for Class A felony charges of trafficking in Williston, Wendy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that through the awareness and through some attempted efforts on law enforcement's part to get educated, they're stepping out to try to kind of learn as they go on how to conduct these kinds of operations. But my concern is with the awareness and with these attempted sting operations, there's victims that are going to be uncovered and have been uncovered, but they're not receiving the services that are available to them because the resources here are so tapped out. And For Her North Dakota is the only direct service provider operating right now in the entire state. So although I think it's great in one aspect, but just arresting the trafficker or just arresting a John here and there, which is a buyer of sex, is not the solution for victim services. We desperately need funding for a shelter.
I know you're looking to raise that for For Her North Dakota. There's also the big conversation going on in Washington around the bill in the Senate now that would provide some victim services for women, young women who get out of this world. What is that transition like? What do young women, and often women, not only, but of course often, what do they need when they first make a break or try to from the people who are trafficking them, Wendy?
Well, really, For Her North Dakota's vision and mission is not long-term or transitional care. That, I think, is the ultimate goal, and that's where I really try to send a message to the girls to empower them to make that choice. But what For Her North Dakota focuses on is really stabilizing the girl, getting them rested, getting them fed, you know, all those tangible needs that they need in order to process the thought or the truth behind there is actually hope for them. And so we want, you know, a 30-day crisis shelter where we will be able to offer these girls temporary housing until we can hook them up with our sister organizations around the United States that do long-term programming and transitional services.
We're going to talk with U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota later in this hour, Wendy, but you've got a story of one girl who found your organization, For Her ND, North Dakota, and her, I guess her pimp figured out that she was in touch, and they ran into problems in a hurry, she with him, and ultimately she left kind of stranded.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, law enforcement really needs to. Again, I think it's great that they're attempting training, but they really need to put into practice the training that they're receiving because, again, just arresting the trafficker, otherwise known as a pimp, taking his money as part of the seizure of property and removing him from the scene does nothing for the girl. And this one girl in particular, they left her sitting in a hotel lobby with no resources. It was truly, I believe, a miracle that she had recalled seeing for her North Dakota's information online when they were searching Williston as a place to land, and she stored that away in her head. And when she was in desperate need of help and services, thank God she called For Her North Dakota. Otherwise, she would have been forced to take dates, turn tricks, which means sell her body in order to survive that evening. And that just breaks my heart.
This is an interesting story. You say her pimp had her looking online to figure out if this would be a good market for them to move into. One day she didn't meet her $1,000 a day quota, said she only made $400. You say she was beaten by him, stripped naked, beaten. He's later arrested and she's left sitting there, no support.
Correct. And, you know, that was another issue that I had in that circumstance. And again, we're learning, right? And so there's got to be a level of forgiveness and understanding. But in that situation, I mean, she clearly in the affidavit stated that he was her pimp, that he was beating her because she didn't make her quota. And originally, the guy was only arrested on assault charges and then later only prosecuted with promoting prostitution, not even human trafficking, which was a no-brainer in my opinion. But these traffickers are not, that's one of the stereotypes we need to get out of our head. They're not street thugs who are, you know, just looking to push a couple girls for sale to meet their drug need. These are intelligent businessmen who know that there is a lot of money to be made off of the selling of bodies for sexual purposes. And so they investigate. They look at what law enforcement is doing. They look at how many arrests. They look at how victim services are. They look at John stings, and they will set up camp, so to speak, in areas that are vulnerable, And Williston is just absolutely screaming vulnerability because law enforcement and services are so inadequately prepared to handle human trafficking.
Well, I mean, this is way out there. This is up in the northwest corner of North Dakota, not that far from the Canadian border. This is really a distant corner. The arrests that were made, at least one of the pimps had come up from Phoenix, so they'd come a long way to tap this market.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we work with girls that are in from all over the country, which means that their traffickers, you know, are from those areas too. And so, again, you know, when I do a training and I show and I break it down off of the selling of one body, if that one girl, her quota was $1,000 a month and that trafficker had four girls.
$1,000 a month or a day?
I mean, a day. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for correcting that. So $1,000 a day. Most traffickers have 4 to 6 girls working under them. So that's $4,000 to $6,000 a day, 365 days a year. And the girls get not a dime of that money. You can look at the all-for-profit money that comes in off of the selling and brutal, brutal victimization of these girls who are forced in through force, fraud, and coercion to a life of prostitution under pimp control.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about sex trafficking in the USA, from the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota to, sadly, probably, your town. It is a real national problem. From the new documentary Dreamcatcher here, former teenage prostitute Brenda Myers Powell tries to help women in Chicago who are victims of sexual exploitation, here in trying to enlist, enlisting her former pimp.
It was so much control. It was horrible.
Most abusers start out real sweet, and once you start, it's almost impossible to stop.
I'm here to tell each and every one of you today, it is not your fault.
Not your fault, but on it goes. A couple of months ago in the Georgia town of Dunwoody, this was October last fall, prostitution ring busted. Here's Tim Fecht talking about the scheme run out of two apartment complexes organized online.
This was a very well-organized institution that they had created. We have over 26 victims that were working underneath our people that we have arrested. And so it was a pretty elaborate operation.
And it goes on. We've been talking with Wendy Lazenko. From age 13 to 32, she worked in the sex trade, in prostitution, pornography, strip clubs. She's now executive director, founder of For Her North Dakota. They're looking to raise money to help workers are those who get out of the sex trade in that region where so many men have surged into the man camps and beyond in the big oil boom in North Dakota. She joins us from Minot, North Dakota. With us right now as well from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Bridget Carr. Bridget directs the Human Trafficking Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School. She's a professor there. She's also a member of the Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force, provides training to law enforcement, government officials, healthcare providers. Bridget Carr, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Can you give us a sense, and I know numbers on this are very patchy, but give us a sense of the scale and pervasiveness of this problem in this country.
Well, Tom, I think what you said at the beginning, which is every community is battling this fight, is so true. And sadly, we don't have prevalence numbers. I am asked all the time to give the prevalence number. It just doesn't exist. And it doesn't exist for the very reason that Wendy laid out for us in the earlier segment. We are not treating victims of human trafficking fully as victims. There is something about this crime of exploitation that we have not yet fully accepted. And what I mean by that is, if we think about that young girl sitting in the hotel room after the cops come in and arrest the pimp.
In the lobby. I mean,
in the lobby. In the lobby. Imagine that story when there's no cash on the nightstand. Imagine if I told you, Tom, that there was a claim of sexual abuse against a minor in a hotel room, and they came in and arrested the person exploiting that minor, and the cops left the minor in the lobby. There would be an uproar about that. We have state systems to respond to that. We have child protective services. We have child welfare systems. For some reason, we have not, nationwide, nationwide, state by state, been willing to truly view child victims of sex trafficking as victims of sexual abuse. And until that happens, we're not going to get the right prevalence numbers. We're not going to get the right laws on the books. We're not going to get the right funding. I mean, I deeply admire Wendy's work to open an emergency shelter, and it is sorely needed. But I am deeply sad that we need NGOs and community members to create emergency shelters for children because there's money on the nightstand.
Bridget, you say child victims, and that is a big problem. We'll talk more about it. But this is, I mean, the victims are not only minors in this world of sex trafficking.
That's right. You know, adult victims of sex trafficking, you know, and men and boys, which we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, exist as well. And so we, you know, it's, you know, I think that the sad part is we haven't even figured it out about kids yet. And adults create even more complications. There are people who don't want to view adults who are being exploited for sex as victims. They think that there is a culpability for an adult who is in that world. Well, I struggle to understand how if you are 17 on one day and then your birthday comes, you somehow have power and control and choice to stay or go. Traffickers are really good at what they do. And so when they have power and control over someone, that power and control will stay for quite a while and it doesn't end on the 18th birthday.
I was reading over the weekend how in Sweden and some other countries now, the criminality formally under the law is not placed on the sex worker, but rather on the customer, the John, as Wendy puts it. What about in this country? If you're selling sex, the pimp, obviously, that's criminal. Is the sex worker or the young person being trafficked, or maybe not so young, are they automatically breaking the law as well?
Yes. You know, in the U.S., we have, in reality, not on paper, almost the opposite approach of Sweden. In Sweden, the decriminalization of the sellers of sex has occurred. In America, it's the buyers of sex that are effectively decriminalized. It is rare for a buyer of sex to be arrested. If they're arrested, it's often because they're ticketed to get some money into the law enforcement, you know, coffers, which I understand law enforcement needs to be funded. But, you know, in a number of even high-profile cases around prostitution, you will see the buyers of sex being used to testify against the sellers. So, you know, I have never met a buyer of sex who claims to be a victim of exploitation, but I've met many sellers of sex who are victims of exploitation. And so I think we're walking down the wrong path in the United States when we focus our criminal actions on sellers. I'm not sure that the U.S. is ready to decriminalize the selling of sex. If I thought that was the case, I might work harder to make that happen. But right now, we can't even get states to agree to give immunity to minors who are being sold for sex. It's a state-by-state approach. Prostitution laws are at the state level. And, you know, even here in the state of Michigan, we don't say that children are immune. We say that you're presumed, if you're a minor and you're being sold for sex in Michigan, you're presumed to be a victim of sex trafficking as long as you substantially comply with court-ordered services, which really means your victimization is about how you perform after being exploited, not because you were exploited.
Bridget Carr, Wendy Lozenko, stand by. Jerry's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Jerry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
Okay, so a few years back, I worked at a tax place, and a few of the guys had side jobs in the security business where they would pat people down for weapons outside of the club.
Yeah.
Just get some money, and it would be late at night, so it wouldn't conflict. So I went to go see them do that one day because they invited me, and I noticed that these were, you know, Mexican, like, bailey clubs where, you know, guys would pay about $2 or $3 for a dance, you know, and they would basically dance for a few minutes. Well, when I was outside, there would be these young Mexican girls going back and forth to cars and coming back with big wads of cash. So, it, you know, it definitely clicked that they were prostituting. So then I found out after visiting a few more of these clubs that these girls, they get taken from city to city in like a big tour around the U.S. And I imagine that they're all very young, and by the time they even do reach legal age, they're horribly abused and beat up. And then they basically would probably get tossed out.
Yeah, we can just imagine. But you saw it there firsthand, what, the dance that goes to the parking lot that goes to prostitution in a hurry and how young they were. Jerry, I appreciate your call. Wendy Lozinko, you were, I'm reading here, 13 years old when you got pulled into this world. How did that happen and why?
Well, as I share when I do any kind of training or public speaking, I was exhibiting absolutely every vulnerability that a young person can show in their lives. I was running away. I had come from a broken home and so forth. But I had turned to the help of a friend, and so often that's the case. These traffickers know, especially that young runaways or kids who are struggling at home have needs, and not just tangible needs, but emotional needs too. And so they come in very passionately to meet those needs, very deceiving that their care and wanting to help is truly an act of love, or, you know, and with no strings attached. And like I heard on the little clip that you had played of the one gal describing how the game switches so quick, and it really does, before you even have time to process a way out or what's happening, you're stuck and so manipulated and gripped by fear, there really is truly no way to get out of it. And so many people wonder, why don't these girls just leave? If it's not for the money and they're not, you know, if they're being victimized, why don't they just leave? And so there's so many studies, which I'm sure your other guests can really give insight to, of brain development on a young person and how trauma, affects the thinking and processing. And for, you know, for so long, two parts to my answer on this is, for so long, I knew that I had been a victim of childhood sexual abuse. That was a given. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that what had happened to me as a young runaway and throughout my life working in the sex industry was actually called human trafficking and sexual exploitation until I started working with at-risk youth. And so that was a huge eye-opener to me. I was like most people across the nation that know, you know, that sex trafficking goes on in other countries. And so that was a huge eye-opener to me. And when I do trainings with people such as Child Protective Services or youth homes or domestic violence shelters or anyone who has probably and is probably serving these victims, and halfway through the training, I ask for a show of hands of how many of you now that know just a little bit more information on how to identify victims, how many of you feel you've worked with victims and didn't know it? And almost all the time, at least 50% of the hands go up. And so there is just a massive lack of awareness. And that's what we're trying so hard to bring the knowledge to, the control and the manipulation, because so often it is very difficult to treat or understand that these girls or boys, because it happens to boys too, are victims. I look back in my life, and when I was trafficked in Sturgis or I was being trafficked at parties down in the LA party rock scene, I was a young runaway who was so convinced that my trafficker was in love with me and the life that I was living was exciting, and it came with consequences, but it was much better than going home to an abusive home.
Wendy Lozinko, working now with girls mainly in this situation in the oil fields of North Dakota. A group is For Her North Dakota. Wendy, forgive me, but we've got callers really responding to you here. And Bridget Carr in Ann Arbor, stand by. Michael in Akron, Ohio. Michael, you're on.
Yes, I've been involved with the juvenile and family court system for the past several years, and or the course of the last two or three years. I've encountered a number of adolescent females and a few teenage boys who have been involved with human trafficking and subsequent sexual exploitation. As your previous caller and guest had noted, that there seems to be a common factor among these youth that sets them up for exploitation. They've been involved with substance use. They've come from broken homes where there's pathogenic parenting. They have emotional problems, and they've been acting out in various ways. Each of these youths have been preyed upon, not only by adults, but also some of their peers. This past year, I saw at least four girls from different parts in Ohio that came into contact with the court who had been recruited by their own classmates for involvement in prostitution.
And so you can go in even that way. And Wendy Lazenko had some of that. She was 13. A 16-year-old friend was kind of her way in. Michael, thanks for your call. Bridget Carr, you know, we think of images from abroad, and maybe this is just a blinkered way of thinking of women or sex workers, almost in some cases, almost literally locked up. You know, how does this sort of entrapment, how do people get kept in this? How are they controlled in this country?
Right. The images from abroad or the images from the media, like a movie Taken, we are expecting to see someone, you know, chained to the nightstand or the bed. And really, traffickers are so smart. They know that that would immediately give evidence for law enforcement. And so instead, they use psychological coercion. And the law only requires force or fraud or coercion for adults. Federal law says if you're a minor and you're being sold for commercial sex, you are by definition a victim of sex trafficking federally. Again, states have their own approaches. But it's really the psychological coercion that is the most powerful and keeps people in the longest. I think what Wendy talked about, which was she said, I thought I was in love with him and I thought I was living a very glamorous life. You know, there is this narrative in America that we want sex trafficking victims to be perfect victims. We want them to welcome law enforcement with open arms. We want the Hallmark Lifetime movie ending. Mm-hmm. And that's not the reality for my clients. You know, my clients are often drug addicts. They've been severely abused. They often return to their trafficker or return to the situation. And I think it's because we're so focused on the wrong question. It shouldn't be what are her choices, the victims. It should be what is the perpetrator doing? What is the perpetrator doing to exploit this person? And, you know, we're not comfortable in America talking about the buying of sex. You know, I'm always flooded with media requests when the Super Bowl or a big sporting event happens, and people want to talk about how that event is creating a demand for sex trafficking. And I was so happy to get your request, Tom, because this request shows that we're trying to say sex trafficking is a problem in communities 365 days a year. It's your neighbor. It's your, you know, potentially your spouse, your father, your brother, you know, this person you sit next to in church that is creating the demand for people like Wendy. And until we accept that, we're going to keep, you know, traffickers are going to win because ignorance is bliss for them. And we're pretty ignorant right now.
You say people are feeling overwhelmed by the problem in many communities. Is that because we've been through tough economic times? What's going on?
I think people are overwhelmed by the problem because they have had decades upon decades upon decades of being told that commercial sex is an illegal act in which we arrest all the people we can see, and that's usually just the seller. And so every community provides a jail, and law enforcement knows how to go into a hotel room, arrest the seller, and put her in jail. It's a much harder problem to figure out what you have to do when you have to figure out who might be a victim and who might be a criminal, and people are uncomfortable with that.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sex trafficking in the United States, from the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota to, sadly, probably these days, your town. We've been talking with Bridget Carr at the University of Michigan Law School. She directs the Human Trafficking Clinic there, joining us from Ann Arbor. From Minot, North Dakota, Wendy Lazenko is with us. She's put together a group called For Her North Dakota. You can link to it at our website. They're trying to give help and care to those who get out of the business, manage to find their way out one way or another. For Her North Dakota, link at our website. And right now, from Bismarck, North Dakota, U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp joins us. Democratic Senator from North Dakota, former North Dakota Attorney General. She's had a big focus on trying to stop, rein in human trafficking. She's co-sponsor of the Runaway and Homeless Youth and Trafficking Prevention Act and the Stop Exploitation Through Trafficking Act. Very focused on this. Senator Heitkamp, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This whole issue has been in the news just today out of Washington with this jam-up over a human trafficking bill. We'll look at that, but point first to the bills that you're working on, what they would do and where they stand, Senator Heitkamp.
Well, one of the bills that I think is most significant is the Runaway and Homeless Youth Bill, because if we're going to talk about prevention and early intervention, we need resources and we need to get these young people off the street and into shelters and into treatment. And so much of what we're focusing on is what happens at the prosecutorial level, you know, safe harbors, making sure that we don't re-victimize these victims by creating a criminal record for these victims. But it also is important that we get the resources on the front end to help those frontline workers as they reach out to youth that are homeless, who are at great risk for becoming victims of human trafficking.
But this bill, Runaway and Homeless Youth and Trafficking Prevention Act, has been around since 1974. What's the problem? What's the challenge now, Senator?
Well, the challenge is that there's been a number, as we look at numbers, we think about 45% of those runaways are gay, lesbian, transgender young children, and we don't want them to be discriminated against. And that's created some challenges for the bill based on, I don't know what grounds, why anyone wouldn't want to serve a human being regardless of their sexual orientation, but that's kind of where we're at right now, and hopefully we'll be able to bridge that gap. We've got great bipartisan support. Senator Leahy's been involved in this for years, and Senator Collins, who really is a giant on these issues, she is the prime Republican co-sponsor. So I have great hope that we'll be able to get through these impasses. But my message is simple, that you can't just look at what happens after girls are arrested. You've got to start looking about what happens when they're on the street and then eventually what happens in their home that leads to that young person running away.
Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, of course, saying no young person should have to choose between selling their bodies and a safe place to sleep. But Senator Heitkamp, could you just, I heard you, I'm not sure I understand, how does LGBT come into the debate over putting forth new funds for this bill? Senators who don't want services for gay, lesbian, LGBT people in this situation?
They don't want a recognition that frequently that segment of the runaway population is in fact at risk. That segment of the runaway population needs protection against discrimination. And so that's created some of the impasse on the runaway bill.
That's pretty incredible, because we know that that's going on out there, that exploitation is there as well. And the other, Stop Exploitation Through Trafficking, what would that do?
Well, basically provide some additional support for victims. Also make sure that we're not re-victimizing folks, making sure that we're on top of this issue, both on federal and state levels. And then we've got the safe harbor legislation that's been championed by Senator Klobuchar in Minnesota. Based on a lot of Minnesota's experience, they were among on the cutting edge or the tip of the spear statewide in making this happen. That's important, because we can't charge these young people with crimes, because that reinforces the message that their pimps giving them, their traffickers giving them, which is, you're in as much trouble as I'm in. And so if we're going to catch the traffickers, if we're going to have successful prosecutions, we need to make sure that we have a safe harbor provision.
And what about the bill that's all over the news today that would help with human trafficking but is stalled because of a debate over its prohibition on abortion funding for those who come out of the sex business, and now the Republicans are holding up the nomination of Loretta Lynch for Attorney General. Where does that stand? What's going on?
Well, it's just another symptomatic of the dysfunction that's Washington, D.C., if in fact someone is a trafficked victim, they are a victim of rape, which none of this except, I mean, none of the prohibitions would really apply in this case. And so it's a red herring, but yet the way it was introduced in the bill, which wasn't as open and transparent as it should have been, has created real contention. I think there's some strategies that we can deploy to get through this so that we can actually move these hugely bipartisan efforts of anti-trafficking bills through without having to get into a lot of rancor on issues that, quite honestly, don't really matter at this point for these particular bills.
Wendy Lazenko is with us as we speak, Senator, from Minot, North Dakota, and this is the former sex worker who's become very active in the Bakken oil field area where there's apparently too much of this going on. We've seen arrests there in the last week or so. Are you surprised by what appears to be some kind of surge in sex trafficking in your own backyard where the oil business has just blown up, Senator?
No, I'm not surprised. When I began campaigning in 2012, I, as a former attorney general, I have a lot of friends still in law enforcement who are telling me we're seeing this huge increase in prostitution. And I said, well, you know, you need to understand that prostitution implies that there is a willing seller, and you need to understand that this could be the worst victimization that's going on in North Dakota. And that really engaged us in this discussion between prostitution and trafficking, and how do you confront that? And so we very early on began to look around. We had a hearing very early on in Homeland Security, which I'm on with a senator from New Jersey, basically saying, what are we seeing? And then I will tell you, to back up what Wendy's telling you, when you talk to the people who actually look at what's happening on the internet in terms of advertisements, in terms of offerings that are made, that are contacted, they will tell you that the Bakken area and North Dakota in general has seen a huge spike up that doesn't spike down. Everybody talks about the Super Bowl. What happens during the Super Bowl is there's a huge spike up in those kinds of horrible advertising, and then there's a spike down in the Bakken, and it's just a spike up. And so we've got empirical data that backs up, in fact, what Wendy's saying, either through prosecutions and arrests, but also by people who are doing great intelligence work on what's happening in North Dakota.
Of course, you've had a huge influx of single men far from home there. Wendy Lazenko, you're listening from Minot, North Dakota, to United States Senator Heidi Heitkamp. She sees the problem. She shares your concern about it. What do you have to say to the senator, Wendy? What would you like from her?
It's hard not to get emotional. I'm coming off of several days on the road talking about this issue, and it is so just thank you. It is so encouraging and just gives me confidence in the work that I'm doing, that the senator understands first and foremost, and then is passionate about bringing awareness and change and resources to the issue of human trafficking. But then I get emotional hearing her passion for the runaway youth population, because that's what left me vulnerable. And so on both ends, I have such gratitude for her work, and I think she is an example that should be led in other states. And I am just absolutely honored to be sharing about this reality with someone who is in a place of power and that can bring systemic change through passing bills and establishing laws and bringing in finances. So I'm overwhelmed hearing her talk so appropriately and so passionately about it, a situation and an issue that not only I was personally affected by, but that I live with every day in wanting to serve these victims.
Senator Heitkamp, I know we just have you for a few more seconds. Wendy was in the business and got out of it. There may be others listening right now, young women or young men. What do you say to them, Senator? What should they hear from you?
What I say, reach out, get help. There are tons of people who want to help you. More and more, we're impressing upon prosecutors and law enforcement, even if they're not children. They probably got into the business of children. They're probably coerced as children. They continue to be coerced and manipulated. And so the next thing is to take a look at how we can offer opportunities by expunging records, by quit criminalizing this behavior when it is, in fact, coercion, regardless of what age people are. And that's our next challenge, beyond just the minor, the average age of someone who begins in trafficking is 13, but yet that behavior continues. And Wendy's a perfect example of that. How do we now help her create, or people like her that we're going to encourage to get help, create a new life for themselves and make sure that they can get student loans, make sure they can go to job service, which is part of these other bills. So we're working very hard, but hopefully we'll see a path through this political impasse and actually do the right thing for these victims.
We'll all be watching. U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp, Democratic Senator from North Dakota, joining us today from Bismarck, North Dakota. Senator, thank you very much for being here. Let's go to Laura in Nashville, Tennessee. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, I'm calling. Earlier, you brought this up for a brief moment about the fact that in Europe and other countries, how they're prosecuting the actual men that solicit the sex and charging them. But in America, we seem to put this emphasis on the actual prostitute or the pimp. But why aren't these men that are soliciting sex, why aren't they being considered to be, being charged with these crimes and being charged as, soliciting sex for minors?
Yeah, go after the buyer. Bridget Carr, what about it? Has it been effective in Sweden and elsewhere where it's been flipped that way? And is that under consideration in any state in the United States?
It has been effective. The data that we see from countries that take that approach is that the incidence of human trafficking, in fact, decreases. I don't know of any jurisdiction in America that is seriously considering that approach. And it's really frustrating because I sit in rooms with lawmakers and prosecutors and law enforcement, and we try to get the criminalization taken away from the victims. And what I hear over and over is that if a crime has occurred, we must arrest the people involved. I never hear that statement being made about the buyers of sex. And in almost every state, they're criminalized. The buyer is as criminal in many states as the seller. And so
it's an attitude, not a legal actuality.
Yeah, right. I deeply appreciate Senator Heitkamp's work on legislation, but legislation is not the solution to this problem. I wish it was, as a law professor, because I could write really great legislation, but it's not the solution. It really is a paradigm shift that needs to occur about where culpability lies and who should be punished. We have to stop defining success as simply arresting a pimp and putting that person in jail. And their success has to be about prevention, but it also has to be asking the question, who else is in that room when the sex act occurs? I want to mention that there's a national human trafficking hotline. If people who are listening are being exploited in this way, the number is 1-888-3737-888. There's also a text. You can text Be Free. It's 233-733. When you call that hotline, you're connected with people who can help you. It's not a law enforcement hotline. In fact, it gets you up to people like me who can provide you free legal services and other people. So again, it's 1-888-3737-888 and text 233-733.
We will get that up at our website. Not there yet, but we'll have it. We also have a link to Wendy Lazenko's group For Her North Dakota at our website. Robert in Oak Park, Michigan. Robert, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was wondering, at the top of the show, you had mentioned that Wendy said there was a need for emergency shelters in that area.
Yes.
Had she thought of doing like a Kickstarter GoFundMe campaign?
Wendy Lazenko, are you trying to raise funds online in that way, Kickstarter or something?
We are. I have been personally so incredibly busy with travel and establishing the foundation that's not something personally I can take on and manage, but we do have volunteers now who are stepping up to do those types of fundraisers. I know they've been incredibly successful. So thank you for reminding me about that avenue. And I just want to backtrack just a little bit, if I can, about addressing the demand.
Yep.
Right now, For Her North Dakota's hands are somewhat tied in serving victims until we have a place to take them. We try to do outreach. We try to respond. But where are we going to take these girls to bring them to safety? I personally have brought them into my home and done whatever I can. So right now we're taking this season while we're focusing on raising funds for the shelter to address the demand. March 18th in Minot, we're actually having a men's only break the demand event where I'm going to share very candidly about my story and how it is so similar to so many of the other women who are involved in the sex industry through pornography, stripping, and prostitution under pimp control, to try to break that fantasy that this is a victimless thing to be involved in. And I'm really passionate about that. And we're getting a great response from men who really, some of them know, but some of them are clueless as to the reality of the victimization that a lot of these girls are experiencing. So I'm really excited about that.
Bridget, we've just got a couple of seconds. Does breaking the fantasy work? If you lay out the facts, does demand go down?
There's some evidence that it in fact does, but we have to hold people accountable.
Bridget Carr directs the Human Trafficking Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School, joined us today from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Bridget, just terrific to have you. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
And Wendy, after all of your personal history, to hear the story of you out there now working so hard to help young women who are grappling with this right now is very inspiring. We wish you good luck with For Her North Dakota in the Bakken oil fields and beyond. Wendy Lazenko, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to U.S. Senator Heidi Heitkamp for joining us earlier in this hour. Links to For Her North Dakota and more at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.